DC.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, June 22, 2023. Sudan's Minister of Foreign Affairs wants all diplomatic missions in Khartoum to seek protection from the government of Sudan.
Rapid support forces have been on destructive mode. The rapid support forces have been invading diplomatic missions. They have killed diplomats, used civilians as human shields, raping women, stealing ambulances, and turning hospitals into military barracks.
And the Swedish government donates $8.4 million for improving reproductive health in South Sudan.
Because we do know the challenges of South Sudan with conflicts, flooding, doubts, corruption, and that it's characterized by severe gender inequalities, traditional harmful norms and practices, and high development needs.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The government of Sudan has confirmed that Zimbabwe's embassy and the house of its ambassador in Sudan were broken into in Khartoum. This as fighting continues between Sudan's national army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. Columbus Mavunga reports from Zimbabwe's capital, Harare. The country's foreign minister is calling for the establishment of a well-funded African standby force to ensure defense and security on the continent.
El Walid Abdal Ahmed is the chargé d'affaires at the embassy of Sudan in Harare. He told VOA that Zimbabwe's embassy and the house of its ambassador to Sudan, Emmanuel Runganga Gumbo, were broken into. He blamed the paramilitary rapid support forces.
Rapid support forces have been on destructive mode. The rapid support forces have been invading diplomatic missions. They have killed diplomats, used civilians as human shields, raping women, stealing ambulances, and turning hospitals into military barracks.
He says Sudan's Minister of Foreign Affairs wants all diplomatic missions that have been attacked to liaise with Khartoum on ways to ensure protection.
The Ministry of Foreign Affairs renews its denunciation and condemnation of this terrorist and criminal behavior of the rebel militia forces and calls on the international community to condemn it in the strongest terms.
But Yusuf Esied, a political advisor of the Rapid Support Forces, denies the allegations. He says it's the Sudanese army that has been destroying diplomatic properties since the fighting began on April 15.
Since the beginning of the war, many embassies in Khartoum, they tried to attack them, just trying to mobilize the world against us, against RSF, by attacking embassies and said it is us, without investigation, even without evidence.
And they try to accuse RSF even without evidence.
Zimbabwe's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Frederick Shawa, while attending a virtual conference of the African Union Peace and Security Council, called on the continent to set up a well-funded African standby force.
The standby force plays a vital role in ensuring peace and security across Africa and is an indispensable aspect of the common African defense and security policy. There are still areas of concern that require Council's continued agreement, engagement. This esteemed Council has a responsibility to carefully reflect on the critical role that a well-funded standby force can play in tackling the growing challenges of peace and security on the continent.
Shawa did not mention the conflict in Sudan. The United Nations has said more than 2 million people have been displaced in Sudan since April. Thousands killed and at least 25 million people need aid. For VOA News, I'm Columbus Mavunga in Harare, Zimbabwe.
A top United States diplomat says the U.S. adjourned talks with Sudan's warring military forces because the talks format was not succeeding in the way they wanted. The United States and Saudi Arabia have brokered several ceasefires with Sudan's armed forces and the rival paramilitary rapid support forces, which have been fighting since April 15. Today, however, Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Molly Fee told members of the U.S. Congress the ceasefire have not been fully effective, but allowed the transmission of urgently needed humanitarian assistance. Fee also said the U.S. government is fully engaged in addressing the crisis. A new perception survey sponsored by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan say respondents are eager to participate in the upcoming elections scheduled for 2014. The report notes that some South Sudanese are also worried about the government's ability to organize and conduct elections. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has more from Juba.
In a press statement issued this week, the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, said it conducted a survey to understand the prevailing sentiments among South Sudanese. Habib Labidi is the public information officer at the United Nations Mission in South Sudan. He says the nationwide survey conducted between January and March 2023 show respondents are eager about South Sudan's upcoming elections.
This annual survey, which involves face-to-face interviews with South Sudanese adults across all 10 states, seeks to measure attitudes and perceptions towards the political, humanitarian, and security situation in the country, as well as towards the role of UNMISS.
Labidi says South Sudanese are also concerned about their government's ability to organize and conduct free and fair elections in 2024.
The upcoming elections are of considerable importance to the people of South Sudan. However, there is apprehension about their government's ability to organize and conduct these elections, with many suggesting the need for UN support.
The report cited Jonglei, Western Equatoria and Eastern Equatoria states as some of the dangerous places in South Sudan. Some respondents of the survey say Northern Bahr el-Ghazal, Lagos State and Western Bahr el-Ghazal are some of the safest places in South Sudan. Michael McQuay is South Sudan's information minister and the government spokesperson. He says he disagrees with the findings in the UNMISS-sponsored survey. South Sudan's Peace Monitoring Body, or RJMEC, said in its recent reports that the parties to the 2018 peace agreement have done very little to implement some of the key provisions of the deal. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Juba.
Still in Juba, the United Nations Population Fund and the government of Sweden signed a 90 million Swedish krona, an equivalent of $8.4 million, for implementing UNEP's program in South Sudan. The country director for the United Nations Population Fund in South Sudan says the donation will be used for improving access to maternal and newborn care. For VOA News, Juliana Shapai reports from Juba.
UNFPA and the Swedish government signed a cooperation agreement at the South Sudan Boxing Federation premises on Thursday to highlight UNFPA's support to youth and women in South Sudan. Ademola Olajide is UNFPA's country's representative in South Sudan. He says the donation will strengthen the reproductive health program and response to cases of gender-based violence across the country.
It is important that we work with the people and the government of South Sudan to create an enabling environment where women and men will partner to challenge negative gender social norms and stereotypes, so that optimally men, women, boys and girls will live in a South Sudan where everyone can prosper.
Thomas Brundin, the ambassador of Sweden in South Sudan, says his government wants to ensure the vision of access to sexual and reproductive health to every woman, girl and youth in South Sudan is achieved.
Because we do know the challenges of South Sudan, with conflicts, flooding, droughts, corruption, and that it's characterized by severe gender inequalities, traditional harmful norms and practices, and high development needs. And then coupled with a weak and many times inaccessible health system, women, girls, and youth risks a lot regarding maternal mortality, unintended pregnancy, child marriages, and other forms of sexual and gender-based violence.
An interagency data indicates that South Sudan's maternity mortality rate ranks as one of the highest in the world, with 789 deaths, 100,000 births. Precious Arcangelo is a young South Sudanese woman living with visual impairment. She says UNFPA support comes handy to people living with disability in the country.
I like the way they formed the Youth Advisory Panel, which is inclusivity, which there is people with disability in it, which they can know that how fine is to be a youth and how good is to work together as youth. And I would like to appreciate them because they have done a lot in our lives. Like they have built the capacity of people with disabilities and even youth.
Anna Taker, the focal person for the South Sudan Football Association, says female national football team, the Bright Starlet, says the continuous support from UNFPA have improved the capacity of female footballers who are ready to represent the country at the international tournaments.
Women are no more materials of a second thought as it was back in the years. Women are notable humans who deserve nothing less but a better and life full of respect and dignity. The women of the 21st century have the ability to strive for change and evoke development only if they're given spaces, just as our partners, the UNFPA, have granted to us.
The Sweden government has been working with UNFPA since 2013 to reduce the cases of preventable maternal death, family planning, gender-based violence, and some harmful practices in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shepai in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, funding challenges puts the lives of refugees at risk in East Africa. Find out how after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how does your family take care of an elderly relative?
Once in a while, we sit down with him, speak with him, ask him how he's doing so he doesn't feel lonely. Then we also tell him about what is going on in the world so that he doesn't feel left out.
We make sure we provide the basic needs like food, water, make her happy, not to feel rejected. Because when they are growing and you start to abandon them, they see that they are not needed. And showing them love even brings them healing.
Helping them with the domestic chores, for example, preparing meals for them, helping them with the clothes, cleaning up the house.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on plus one 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, plus one 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. More than 500,000 refugees in Kenya will not receive assistance from the UN Refugee Agency due to lack of funding. Amid the tough conditions, a refugee-led organization in Nairobi, Youth Voices Community, is helping thousands of refugees through education in business and learning new skills to earn a living. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Funding shortages have caused UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, to reduce assistance it offers to more than 570,000 refugees living in Kenyan camps and urban areas in recent years. The agency says as of June 15th, it has received only 31% of the $153 million required funding to adequately meet the needs of these refugees. In response, urban refugees in Nairobi are learning new skills to survive and start their own businesses. They receive training in online product selling at the Youth Voices Community Center, a refugee-founded and led organization that empowers urban refugees. Founded in 2016 and in collaboration with other independent groups, at least 120 refugees have benefited from the business training in the past 12 months. Mirani Mamisa, a Congolese refugee, is a new member of this class.
As a refugee, my life can change any time. If I start my business, it can change my life. I can't continue to live like this.
With the authorization of the Kenyan government, at least 91,000 refugees have found shelter in urban areas where economic opportunities are scarce, even for the local population.
We want them to become self-reliant. And being self-reliant means that they either take up job opportunities or they either start up their businesses. And because of maybe the limitations that comes with maybe finding jobs in Kenya, so we are shaping them to begin to start their own businesses, because that way it is actually easier for them to be able to be self-reliant.
Nyaruhimbi Janine is a refugee sharing this shop with a Kenyan. She says the training has helped her to improve her business skills.
Mimi naenda tu kwa duka au kwa soko hata kikomba nikiona ka blouse kamzuri na nunua tu nasema
labda. When I go to the market, if I see a nice blouse, I buy it, thinking my customers will like it. But what I've learned is that talking to my customers and understanding their preferences, as well as not giving credit, I stopped giving credit. And most importantly, I learned how to save my money.
Na ingine sana sana nijua kusave.
The theme for this year's World Refugee Day is Hope Away From Home, and this hope is being encouraged here in Kenya. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we go to Sierra Leone, where voters head to the polls on Saturday for presidential elections. Older voters who lived through the country's civil war from 1991 to 2002 say they are concerned that the youth who rioted last August in protest of the country's economic challenges may resort to violence. Sinanu Todd reports from Freetown on a door-to-door campaign by older voters aimed at maintaining peace on the election day.
Khalil Mara was only 8 years old when rebels invaded his family home in 1991 during the Sierra Leonean Civil War. He recounts how his aunt was killed in his presence and his village burned down.
They cut off my aunt's breasts, both of them, and she bled to death. They beat us up with ropes and canes and burned down our houses. My uncle offered to give them money and cattle, but they refused. They said they wanted his life, so they shot him too.
Like Mara, many other civil war survivors do not want a repeat as voters head for the polls. Some citizens say the youth have been agitated since a protest last August turned bloody and took the lives of more than 25 people. Fatou Bewa is a teacher in Freetown. She says many of her neighbors are fleeing to the countryside to avoid being caught up in violent disturbances.
If this knowing,
some youth are saying that they are ready to fight if they don't win the election. Some say the last elections were not credible, so they are ready to defend this year's elections at all cost.
The Residual Special Court Interactive Forum is a consortium of more than 100 civil society organizations, and they say some political aspirants are seeking to stir up trouble. They have therefore targeted potential hotspots for violence to campaign for peace and counter what they say is misinformation and unethical campaigning by some presidential candidates.
Because we want to make sure that our elections are very peaceful, so we are going out to tell the history of the world, to tell the history of violence, the effects of violence. Because young people who didn't know were the ones who took part in the insurrection last year.
Sierra Leone's national security officials say data available to them shows a significant reduction in this year's election violence as compared to 2018's. They say only 14 cases of minor disturbances, such as destruction of opposition campaign materials, were recorded between April and the end of May. They say there have been some cases of arson in the last few weeks, but say that everything is under control.
The military will be coming to support the police, but their intervention will be exclusively limited to static deployments and mobile patrols, just so that we are certain that in the event that a situation of security wants to degenerate, the military will be hand in hand to support its counterpart, the Sierra Leone Police.
As Sierra Leoneans prepare to vote, many are hopeful that the day will be peaceful. Sena Anutod for VOA News, Freetown.
From Freetown, we go to Johannesburg, where international research company IPSOS has conducted an extensive survey across Africa about the war between Russia and Ukraine. Some analysts have described the results as surprising. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Many African governments have expressed neutrality in the war. Some have abstained from United Nations votes condemning Russia's invasion. South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa has often spoken for the continent about the fighting in Eastern Europe.
Africa has not been and will not be drawn into a contest between global powers. We will maintain our position on the peaceful resolution of conflict wherever those conflicts occur. Some countries, including our own, are being threatened with penalties for pursuing an independent foreign policy and for adopting a position of non-alignment.
But the Western Alliance regards actions taken by some African countries as pro-Russian. South Africa, for example, says it wants stronger military cooperation with President Vladimir Putin's government. Some African governments are allowing sanctioned Russian vessels to dock in their ports. Ipsos Africa representative Marie Harris helped coordinate the survey, which involved 8,000 people from two major countries in each region of the continent, including South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, Senegal, and Zambia.
Overall, if I look at all the results, I have to say that the support for Ukraine is a lot stronger than the support for Russia.
Ipsos says more than 6 out of every 10 Africans polled were of the opinion that Russia's invasion of Ukraine violated international law. Putin presents himself as being on the side of Africans he says have been oppressed by the West, even as these mercenaries kill African villages, prop up dictators, and take control of gold and diamond mines and oil fields on the continent. Harris says the poll shows many Africans don't trust Putin and want Russian troops to leave Ukraine.
If we ask people then whether their government should support Ukraine or Russia, more than half of South Africans, Nigerians and Kenyans say their government should support Ukraine. In the last point, we say to them, well, if you then personally had to choose one of the two countries, if it was up to you, who would you support? They imply quite strong support for Ukraine, and South Africa and Kenya again there, the two strongest countries, saying that Ukraine should be supported and not Russia.
Analysts say the survey results reveal Kenyans and South Africans have access to unbiased news about the war by way of robust and free media. The survey reflects almost 80% of Kenyans support Ukraine. But Harris says in South Africa particularly, there's some support for Russia based on the Kremlin's narrative about the conflict.
It is again what the case was that Russia put forward, that they are not the aggressors in the war, that it was actually Ukraine with their application to become part of NATO and with the NATO alliances on their borders. Poland is part of the NATO alliance, The Baltic states are part of the NATO alliance. Now Sweden, Finland are part, and this is what we've got.
Harris says it's very significant that most respondents agree that Russia has committed war crimes in Ukraine. The International Criminal Court wants South Africa to arrest Putin on war crimes charges should he visit the country for a meeting in August. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg, we come back to US, where President Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, pleaded guilty to two minor criminal charges this week. While Republicans say the plea deal would not stop their probe into the president and his family, Democrats said those concerns did not compare to the charges faced by former President Donald Trump. VOA's congressional correspondent Kathy Gibson has more.
In every part of the American
the
life.
President of the United States pledging his support.
I'm very proud of my son.
As his son, Hunter Biden, struck a plea deal with federal prosecutors concerning tax evasion and a gun charge. Congressional Republicans like House Speaker Kevin McCarthy criticized the Department of Justice's decision to make that deal.
If you were the president's leading political opponent, the DOJ tries to literally put you in jail and give you prison time. If you are the president's son, you get a sweetheart deal.
Democrats, meanwhile, said this was an example of the U.S. justice system working properly.
Those things are serious, but they've got nothing to do with presidential corruption.
And one political historian says it's an unprecedented moment in presidential history. Matt Dalek of George Washington University.
It's a bit unusual to see a Department of Justice from a sitting president indict and win a plea conviction, basically a guilty plea, from the president's own son.
But Republicans said the deal does not change their broader investigation into the Biden family's financial dealings.
This is still an investigation of Joe Biden. The president's son, obviously, is a person of interest in the investigation. We believe that we've already brought out overwhelming evidence that would suggest a money laundering, wire fraud, racketeering, being an unregistered foreign agent.
Concerns about double standards in the U.S. justice system have already been a theme on the 2024 presidential campaign trail.
I think there needs to be one standard of justice in this country. Let's enforce it on everybody and make sure we all know the rules. You can't have one faction of society weaponizing the power of the state against factions that it doesn't like.
Republican lawmakers argued Wednesday that Department of Justice investigations into Trump were politically motivated.
Maybe instead of the never-ending attacks on President Trump, maybe the country would be better off if we figured out how the whole false Trump-Russia narrative started.
Democrats say accusations that the Justice Department has been weaponized against Trump is a distraction from the serious espionage and corruption charges the former president faces.
They seem incapable of assigning any agency or responsibility to Donald Trump for problems that are Trump's and Trump's alone.
George Washington University historian Matt Dalek told VOA that the allegations are meant to motivate Trump supporters.
Trump, I think, has been very effective, of course, at using his enemies or using his critics or using, frankly, the legal system to kind of create an us versus them a mindset. And Republicans, again, they amplify that.
Republican Representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert are expected to introduce impeachment resolutions against Biden this week, but are not expected to gather enough votes to move forward. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Nelson Lopez, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.